5, 4, 3, 2, 1, player one, ready, go!
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Player One here on Sin, second week of the season, and we are ready to get going with another great show. But before we jump into it, on behalf of Player One and Sin Media, I'd like to acknowledge and pay respects to the people of the Woiwurrung and Boomerang language groups of the Eastern Kulin Nations, on whose unceded lands the Sin Studio stands. And we extend this respect to the traditional custodians and peoples of the lands and waters our content reaches. It always was and always will be Aboriginal land. Welcome to Player One. Here at 8 p.m. we are with you for another, for 2 hours of gaming content coming right to your ears. I am Zach, got some really exciting stuff coming up, so, you know, better stay tuned. Also, let us know what you've been playing lately on our socials, at Player One Sin, Player One S-Y-N, all one word on Instagram. Hit us up, let us know what you've been playing, anything good, anything you recommend, anything exciting. A bit later, we're going to be talking about couch co-op games, so if you've got any that you have been really into lately, let us know, because that is really, really exciting, really cool to hear. Also, check out previous shows on our podcast. Just look up Player One wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Omni, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, just wherever you get your podcasts. Give us a listen, because there's a whole bunch of great stuff on there from the past few years. And, of course, more stuff coming up as the year goes on. Speaking of the year going on, today you can hear, as always, news headlines and new releases, a fair bit happening and a decent little bit coming out this week as well, and the playlist as per usual. I'll be talking about what I've been playing this past week, as well as a couple of things that I've been really looking forward to that are coming out soon. And for the last little bit of the first hour, we have a guest joining us. Any fans of Smash Bros, stay tuned, because you'll be keen to hear that. You're listening to Player One here on Sin. I am Zach. I am taking you through our lovely, lovely news headlines and new releases, because a lot's been happening in the world of gaming the past couple of weeks. A lot of speculation, so hopefully in the next week or two, we'll get a bit more confirmation about some of these things, but still some interesting stuff nonetheless. The first thing that caught my eye, and this was reported by Reuters, is that there's an Elden Ring mobile game in development by Tencent. Not sure how that's going to work. I will be honest, when I think games translating to mobile, Elden Ring doesn't really come to mind immediately. It's not the first one I'd look at, but still interesting nonetheless. So hopefully we'll find out a bit more about that, because it could be good. I kind of get the feeling it probably won't be, but it could be. I don't know. And that's actually been worked on for a little while there. So yeah, hopefully we'll see some more of that. And kind of the big, big news from this week is there's a lot of speculation about Xbox and what's going on with them. And I'll definitely be talking a bit more about that later. But long and short of it is that there's been a lot of rumors about a bunch of different Xbox games potentially going multi-platform. The big ones being Hi-Fi Rush and Starfield and the new Indiana Jones game, all potentially seeing releases on multi-platform. And when I say multi-platform, I mean Xbox, obviously, but beyond just Xbox and PC, because most of these games already come to PC, especially with Game Pass being available on both console and on PC. But rumors that, at least I know Hi-Fi Rush, there are rumors about a Switch and PS5 release. Not sure about the others, not sure about Starfield and Indiana Jones, whether they have Switch releases rumored as well. But at the very least, definitely Hi-Fi Rush getting rumored around as being multi-platform. Which I personally kind of hope happens, because I have not played it yet and I really want to, but I don't have an Xbox and my PC is bad. Anyway, we don't actually have confirmation about that yet, but there was a little bit of, not confirmation, but definitely more talks in the works, with Phil Spencer, the CEO of Xbox, tweeting out that there was going to be a business update sometime next week, which this was tweeted a week ago, so probably sometime within the next few days, we will hear some more about this. I'm very curious to see what this could look like. I'm very curious to see if Microsoft is going to kind of drop out of hardware entirely. I wouldn't be that surprised. The Xbox branding doesn't really carry that much weight in my opinion, compared to what it used to. Like, it's still a big name, but the consoles themselves aren't really that impactful anymore. I feel like they've kind of really solidified the Xbox brand as associated with, like, Game Pass rather than with the consoles themselves. So I kind of wouldn't be that surprised if something like this does happen and they do kind of drop out of hardware. I don't think they would drop out of it entirely. I think they would continue to make hardware. I fully expect that they won't make consoles with disc drives at all. I almost expect them to move into making like streaming boxes that can run Game Pass pretty much. Now, this is speculation. I don't know if that's going to happen, obviously. I do not work at Microsoft. But I wouldn't be surprised if that kind of is the trajectory that they're going for. And I think this will be a very, very interesting update when it does come along to get some confirmation about what's actually going on there. And last little bit of news, but another pretty big one, and this is reported by IGN, is that Disney is partnering with Epic Games to create a, quote, games and entertainment universe within Fortnite. And that's a quote from the Disney CEO, Robert Iger. Games and entertainment universe. Now, Fortnite has been pushing that content delivery model for a while. And I mean, it's known for its like crossovers and brand deals. And with how much they've done deals, or not deals, but like crossovers, especially with Marvel, I don't think this comes as particularly surprising. But I do wonder what exactly this will look like, given that Disney owns so many properties, and I don't think we're going to see all of those represented within Fortnite. I just don't see how that could work. I say this as someone who plays Kingdom Hearts, so I'm used to Disney characters being where they don't belong, but still, something about it feels like they're maybe pushing something that I don't know if it'll actually end up that successful. This to me feels, at the very least, kind of gut reaction, feels like it's trying to be penned as a replacement for Disney Infinity, the Toys to Life thing that they had going that got cancelled, because all of those things got cancelled after a while there. This feels like it could be a sort of semi-replacement for that, as in it's this, you know, one big game that all of the Disney stuff is in. But this time the game is Fortnite, which already has a massive, massive user base. So yeah, curious to see what this will look like. We don't really have that many details yet. Again, it's games and entertainment universe, which could mean basically anything. Games and entertainment, yep. Moving on to the new releases coming out this week. We've got a fair bit out this week, actually. So on the 13th of February, we've got Banisher's Ghost of New Eden coming to PS5, Xbox Series X and S, and the PC. Islands of Insight coming to PC. Lisfanger, the Time Shift Warrior, also coming to PC. Ultros coming to PS5, PS4, and PC. And Fight Crab 2 coming to PC. On the 14th of February, we've got RZ, the Jewel of Faramore, PS5, PS4, Series X and S, Xbox One, Switch, and PC. And then we've also got Tomb Raider 1-3 Remastered coming to PS5, PS4, Series X and S, Xbox One, and PC. No Switch release for that one. On the 15th of February, we've got Lake coming just to Switch. Plate Up coming to PS5, Series X and S, PS4, and Switch. And Hellskate coming to PC. I am really, really interested to see what happens with Hellskate. I believe it's early access. I really hope it gets a console port at some point, because that game looks cool. Like, I've only seen a trailer, but it looks cool, if nothing else. And rounding out the week on Friday, we've got Mario vs. Donkey Kong coming to Switch, which is I believe it's a remake of the Game Boy original. And we've got Skull and Bones coming to PS5, Series X and S, and PC. And that's a big one. That game has been in development for years. I believe it began life as kind of a spin-off from Assassin's Creed Black Flag and has just kind of spiraled into being its own thing. I'm curious to see how well it does. It does kind of look like it's trying to be a bit Sea of Thieves-y. Which, from what I know, Sea of Thieves has, like, a pretty dedicated player base. It's not the biggest thing in the world, but, like, the people who like it do really, really like it. So, I don't know, hopefully we'll get something good. Hopefully we'll get some good pirate action going there. It is time for the playlist. We talk about what we've been playing this week, and I had a weirdly busy but also very, very quiet week for gaming this week. I had a uni intensive subject, so I was busy studying all day, every day, did not have a ton of time to sit down and play video games, but what that did mean was I had a lot of time where I was sitting at my computer procrastinating, which meant I spent a lot of time getting really into Bloons Tower Defense 4 for some reason. I would just have it open in like a separate tab from my like uni lectures and just kind of have it going in the background like every, you know, 5 minutes or so, just jump over, play a little bit of that, and then jump back into trying to study. Don't recommend doing that if you're trying to study, but do recommend doing that if you want to play games from when you're in like primary school. I used to play those games, actually probably high school, a lot back in the day, because yeah, you could just open them in like a browser and just play them for a bit. Weirdly, hold up very well, and also weirdly keep getting updated. I'm not sure why they keep updating Bloons Tower Defense 4, but they do, and I kind of appreciate that. It's a good time. It's a good little time waster. As for the actual video games that I played this week, Bloons Tower Defense is an actual video game. I don't care what anyone says. But I also got into a series that I've kind of had my eye on for a while, but had never actually, like, sat down and played. And I finally jumped into the Trine series. So they're a series of 2D platformers. I believe the third game's 3D. I've only played 1 and 2 at the moment, but there's 5 of them so far. I picked them up on PS5, although they are just, like, the PS4 versions. And, yeah, pretty fun. I did play the demo of, I think it was Trine 4, years ago. Like, I think I played this back on Wii U. Actually, it might have been Trine 2 back on my Wii U years ago, and wasn't a huge fan, but now definitely clicked a little bit more. They're from, I believe it's a Swedish developer named Frozen Byte, and their kind of bread and butter is multiplayer couch co-op games. And yeah, I haven't had a chance to play any of them multiplayer. Unfortunately, I've only been playing single player, but still definitely a really good time. The basic premise is you play as like 3 different characters that you can switch between on a whim, each of which have different abilities. So you've got a wizard named Amadeus, a thief named Zoya, and a knight named Pontius. The first game's not balanced particularly well. It doesn't really feel like you're solving puzzles so much as you're just trying to get past the game's wonky physics, and the physics are pretty wonky. You get used to them, but things never feel 100% right. It doesn't really feel like you're solving puzzles. Also, so Amadeus can make platforms, and introducing a character that can make platforms in your puzzle platformer definitely makes the design a little more complicated, because it is very, very much a viable strategy to just stack platforms until you can reach whatever you're trying to reach, but still pretty fun. Zoya has a grappling hook, which makes her the favorite character by default. If you introduce a character with a grappling hook, they're gonna be my favorite character, and Pontius can hit stuff real good. And that's the other big downside of the game, is the combat is really, really just not there. In the first game, it's not too bad. I mean, the combat is bad, it's just that there's not that much of it. But you're just fighting the same skeletons over and over and over again with a couple of spiders here and there, and it's not very interesting. In the second game, the combat itself plays better, but it's not that much better, and there's so much more of it that makes it worse. Like, it's an improvement over the first game, but it's not much of an improvement, and now there's, like, dedicated combat sections. So it kind of loses out in the end. They do introduce some new abilities in the second game and add in many more, like, actual puzzles. Screens where I was sitting there like, okay, how do I solve this? And the answer still sometimes is abuse the game's wonky physics to just find a way to kind of get over a little ledge, which doesn't always feel great, but it does feel very freeform. And massive props to the developers for making a game with 3 different characters where you can kind of get through anything with any character. It feels best and it works best when you are switching between them, but if you really, really just like playing as one specific character, you kind of, for a lot of the game, can just pick them. You will have to swap at some point, and swapping is instant. It's not like you go into a menu or anything. You literally just hit the trigger and you swap character. But making a puzzle game where you have all of these different abilities, it works best when you are putting them all to use. But it is still interesting that you can kind of solve puzzles in multiple ways using whichever character you feel like. It would be more fun in multiplayer. You can very clearly tell, like, it was designed with that in mind, and would benefit from playing with other people, but like I'm enjoying myself. And the biggest compliment to this game is the art style. The first game and the second game, like they came out, God, I think the first game came out in like 2011. I'm going to do a little Google on that one. 2009. Oh my God. It is gorgeous. These two games, absolutely beautiful. They look fantastic. Very, very classical fantasy. The story itself, nothing to write home about. It's pretty much exactly what you think of when you think of a generic fantasy story. But everything looks so detailed and the characters look fantastic. I wish there was a little bit more expressiveness to them. I wish they bantered a little bit more because the personalities that are established are pretty fun and have a fun dynamic. I really like the Discworld series, a series of books by Terry Pratchett. The main character in a few of those books is like a really bad at his job wizard. And Amadeus is just that. He's a wizard who is bad at his job. And I am such a sucker for that trope of just a really crappy wizard. I don't know why. I love it so much. I wish that they bantered a little bit more. They do in the second game compared to the first. So I'm hoping as the series goes on, we'll see a little bit more of that overall. But yeah, let me know what you've been playing this week. And outside of my video gaming, I've also been doing the usual weekly D&D session, which, you know, is always a bit of fun. And I've been continuing getting back into LARP at Swordcraft, which, yeah, is a good time. I'm still really enjoying it. It's still fun. The rules keep changing, which is a bit annoying, but it's like any game system. The rules are going to change here and there a little bit. So, yeah, I'm keen to keep jumping back into that. Let me know what you've been playing. Let me know how that's been going. If you've got any recommendations, drop them on Instagram at player1syn. That's player1syn, all one word. Earlier I mentioned that if you were a Smash Bros. Fan, you should definitely stay tuned. And that's right now because I am joined by Ainsley Turner. You are putting on a show, Super Smash Bros. Live. Welcome to Player One.
Hi, Zach. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for joining us. So, kicking things off, I guess, you know, we are all about the games here. So, what's your history with the Super Smash Bros. Series look like?
I have been playing video games with my brother my whole life. So, we had the first Super Smash Bros. On the N64, and we played it on the GameCube with Melee, and on the Wii with Brawl, and now on the Switch with Ultimate. So, I've done all the consoles. And we've spent many hours playing tournaments, playing the story modes. It's been a lot of fun.
Yeah, I didn't jump in the series until Brawl. I was a bit before Melee and the first game, but definitely a fan. And who do you main?
I actually really like Mr. Game & Watch, which is, I think, a bit left field. And I like making him that, like, aqua colour. Like the really specific aqua, like bright aqua colour.
That is a bit left field. I don't know if I've ever met someone who mains Mr. Game & Watch.
Yeah, no, my brother taught me how to like main him properly. I think my brother just like took a liking to him. So I, you know, got taught how to do it. And yeah.
Yeah. Do you play competitive or?
No, I haven't. I understand there's a really competitive scene though. I've kind of like dipped my toes in like researching the competitive scene. And I'm really impressed by like the community there.
Yeah, it really blew up. I mean, like, Melee's had a competitive scene for years, but I feel like once Smash 4 and more so Ultimate rolled around, they really focused in on it a little bit more. Yeah, so anyway, Super Smash Bros. Live. Tell us a bit about that.
So it's an interactive music video game experience where the audience plays the game while a 9-piece band soundtracks the entire thing. So we follow the gameplay on screen, so every stage has a soundtrack and we play that theme, and then if you get certain items that have sounds associated with them, like the hammer item, we will actually swap into the hammer and play the little like oh, it's really chaotic, but it's a lot of fun.
That's fantastic. And this is the second time you're running that event?
Yes, it is.
Yeah. So what was the first one like?
It was so much fun. I think everyone like left with a smile on their face. It was just like, it was really chaotic. And half the time, like, you kind of miss the cues or like you don't know what's going on. But I think that's part of the fun as a musician. And then I unfortunately couldn't watch the gameplay because I was playing like the piano, but I could hear like a lot of like screams from the crowd, like, you know, things happening. It was really exciting. So I think everyone had a lot of fun.
That's great. And so you piano?
Yes.
Always in these? Yeah, nice, nice. And do you have a personal favourite song from the soundtrack to play?
Oh, to play. I mean, they're all so fun because I picked all of them, so they're all really meaningful to me. I love the Pikmin theme and I love the Banjo-Kazooie theme. Mm. And then we do kind of, I mean, it's a surprise, but I'm going to spoil a surprise. We play the Mii Channel theme as an encore. And I've arranged it as like a real like Latin bossa. So like it starts off normal, but then like it goes into like, oh, you know, you're sitting by the beach, you're relaxing, you're listening to this beautiful like elevator music. It's really fun.
That's so fun.
Yeah, we jazzed it up.
That's so cool. So with the format of the actual like tournament, it's a casual tournament.
Very
like,
casual. So we have a raffle. Everyone gets a raffle ticket when they show up. We're running 16 matches, 4 players per match. So for the first 12 matches, it'll be via raffle. So if your name gets called, your ticket gets called, you get to play. And then the final 4 matches will be a tournament of the winners of the previous 12.
Great. So it's a very, like, is it like items on, as casual as it gets kind of?
Yeah, we have about half of the items on. We have the items that have fun sounds associated with them. But yeah, only like half the items.
Yeah, so like the hammer, the star.
Yeah, the star. Yeah. No Pokeballs. The Pokeballs are a bit too chaotic. And no Final Smashes either, because that feels like a little bit unfair. Because if you get it, you're like kind of...
You win the game.
Yeah, yeah, pretty much.
You win the game.
Yeah.
And it's for Ultimate specifically.
Yep.
Would you ever want to do the other games?
I think it's just like, if you think about it, we want to have like a high resolution because you're projecting it on a large screen. So Ultimate just kind of translates better to just a larger screen.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's this Friday, 16th of February at the Retreat Hotel.
Yeah.
Same place last time as well.
Yes, it was.
Was it a more competitive tournament last time?
Or? We just kind of ran it really casual last time. We didn't have a tournament at all, but we decided to change it up this time just for a bit of fun.
Yeah, nice. Is there a prize?
There is a prize. You have to come along to find out what it is.
Very cool, very cool. So with the actual like idea behind it, where did that come from?
So there's actually another group called Mario Kart Live. They run the same concept but with Mario Kart, and I've been to a few of their gigs and I was just like blown away by it. It was so exciting and fun. So I've copied them out of love, and then I chose Super Smash Brothers because that's a game that's meant a lot to me as a kid. I grew up playing it, so it felt really natural, and that sort of game lends itself really well to a sort of an audience playing at the same time. And then the music's just really great. Because you have all the themes from all of the franchises that are represented in that game. So it's like you get to play and listen to DK, you get to listen to Kirby, Mario, Banjo, like all those really fun themes that like you know from other games.
It is a great like communal game.
Mm.
A little bit later in the show, I'm going to be talking a bit more about multiplayer, like couch co-op games and couch multiplayer games. Do you have any other favorites outside of the Smash Brothers series?
I loved playing Mario Party as well. It's a classic. Yeah. This is going to be really specific. On the Nintendo 64, there was a racing game called Snowboard Kids.
I've never heard of it.
Oh, it's this like weird Japanese one, and me and my brother like played it. And it was my favorite one to play because it's the only one that I could actually beat him at, which is most of its appeal. And I mean, he'll attest to that. So that one's really fun. And I think like not every game has like a multiplayer mode, but I know Super Mario Galaxy, it has a two-player thing where the second player gets to collect all the
like
star
bits. Controls are like a Luma, yeah.
Well, you get to collect the star bits. So I got to do that bit.
Nice.
My brother played. And then, I mean, Mario Kart, obviously that one, but the GameCube one, Double Dash, has the two people in the kart, and that was my favorite Mario Kart to play because I got to not have to drive, but I still got to win.
Fair. Is Ultimate your favorite Smash Brothers game, or
I think
a different one?
Just based on like nostalgia, I think Brawl would be. And I really love the story mode on that one. That was like really engaging and fun, and not too hard and not too long.
Yeah, I started with Brawl, so I'm definitely biased.
Yeah, yeah.
100% biased towards it.
But like, I love Melee as well, because that one I think I've probably played the most. And then it's so weird going back to the N64 version. You're like, oh, it actually looked like this.
I've played the N64 game a couple of times, and it feels weird. Like, it's cool from like this is where the series started.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But I could not sit down and like actually play it for more than an hour.
Well, I think there's only like 12 stages or something. It's very limited, and I think there's only like 8 characters. I mean, we got everything we could out of that game, but just going from like the N64 version to the GameCube version is like leaps and bounds.
Are there any other games that you would want to do this sort of live format with?
I mean, I would love to. I also just, it's hard to think of one where it actually work, which has like a multiplayer aspect and really recognizable music. And then I would love to if I also had the time. It generally took me 6 months to like develop the music for this. So it was definitely a labor of love.
Can you tell me a bit about the rest of the band?
So we have a 9-piece. We have a full rhythm section, so guitar, bass, drums, keys, which is me. And then we have 2 reed players, so they're playing saxophones, flutes. And then we have a brass player, so she's doing trombone, trumpet, and I think she's got the tuba out for the Banjo-Kazooie theme, I think. I think we wanted the tuba last time. There was problems with the tuba last time, but we might have the tuba this time. And then we also got a violin player to play all the fiddle stuff in some of the tunes.
That sounds really, really exciting. If people want to find out a bit more about Super Smash Bros. Live, which again is this Friday, so it's coming up pretty quick, where can they find the event and more about you?
We are on social media, so we are on Instagram and TikTok at Super Smash Bros. Live, and you can find out all the details on those social pages.
You are listening to Player One here on Sin. It is 9:01, which means I'm 1 minute late. Oh no, I'm so sorry. But it is top of the hour. You should get in touch with us on our socials at PlayerOneSyn. That is PlayerOneSYN on Instagram. Tell us what you've been playing. Tell us what you're looking forward to coming out soon. And very importantly, tell us about any good local multiplayer games, because that's what we're talking about a bit later, especially because it's Valentine's Day, you know? It's Valentine's Day, not today, obviously, but coming up this week, it's Valentine's Day, and, you know, what games do you want to play with your partner? Or just with your friends. That also works. But tell us what you've been playing. Tell us what you've been wanting to play. And check out our podcast. Just look up Player One wherever you get your podcasts. That's Omni, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify. You know, all the podcast places. Just look us up. We'll be there. And if we're not there, look somewhere else. Just keep looking around. You'll find us eventually. Anyway, coming up, like I said, we're going to be talking about local multiplayer games. But before that, I'm also going to be talking a little bit about what's going on with Microsoft and where the Xbox might be going. Because a lot's been kind of tossed up over the past week, and we don't really have any solid details yet, but I thought it'd just be interesting to kind of look into that a little bit and figure out a bit about what's going on with Microsoft. Because, yeah, they're kind of in a weird spot. And I feel like they might end up changing significantly over the next year, but we'll see. You're listening to Player One here on Sin with Zach. So, there's been a whole bunch of rumors and speculation about Microsoft, specifically about Microsoft potentially leaving the hardware industry entirely and kind of basically stopping making Xbox consoles and instead focusing entirely on software and specifically on Game Pass and bringing that to other platforms. Now, earlier when I started the show, I was talking about how I get the feeling this is something they will do eventually. I do have a little correction to make because I have actually just read an article from Forbes where Phil Spencer basically said, no, that's not something that's happening. Like, Xbox consoles will still exist. Now, I still think that they will transition out of the physical hard or out of physical games, the discs. I do still think that's something they will eventually phase out. And I do expect them to lean much more heavily into Xbox Game Pass and game streaming in general. That's something that they've pushed really, really hard in the past, bringing it to PC with Xbox Everywhere. It's kind of feels like the inevitability of the way Microsoft is going. I don't know if that means they will stop making hardware entirely. I doubt it, especially based on the fact that Phil Spencer basically said, no, that is not what's happening. But I still think they will, at the very least, scale things back. And hardware's never been Microsoft's main focus. It never really has. The Xbox brand is a big brand, but it's pretty consistently been outdone by specifically PlayStation and, in a good year, Nintendo. In a bad year, definitely not, but in a good year, it has. Now, I'm very curious to see what the business news that Phil Spencer was talking about ends up actually being. Because with these rumors suggesting so many of their games going multi-platform, like I said, the big one is Hi-Fi Rush. Starfield, although Forbes have reported that that has actually apparently been retracted by some, so possibly not. And Sea of Thieves is a pretty likely one as well. With those going multi-platform, it kind of leaves the Xbox in a really interesting and concerning, maybe, spot. It's a real test, I guess, of whether exclusives can sell a console or not. Are there people who are buying Xboxes just for the exclusive games? Sure. Will it matter if those exclusive games don't exist? Maybe. Because, to an extent, they already don't. These games are all also available on PC. So, does Microsoft have any exclusives anymore? I don't really know. Could they resort to just making Game Pass machines, basically? I think so, and I really wouldn't be surprised. I want to hear your thoughts, you know, let us know at PlayerOneSyn, PlayerOneSYN on Instagram. Do you think that that's something Microsoft will end up doing? Like, do you think they will transition out of hardware, not entirely, but at least out of, like, physical games? It's very interesting because they've consistently pushed the Xbox, and they have done multiple revisions of consoles and hardware upgrades. We're not just making a console, we're making the most powerful console ever, and that's kind of been a big part of their branding. And they've been fairly successful with that sort of image, but it hasn't really translated as much into, like, hardware success itself. It hasn't really translated into Xbox actually outselling, again, mainly PlayStation. Nintendo, again, on a good year, they can outsell them. On a bad year, they don't. I think Nintendo's hard to compare because they aren't really in the same race as Microsoft and PlayStation are. Ever since, like, the Wii, they haven't really been pushing hardware, like, you know, power in any way, shape, or form. There are also, just little side note, rumors that we'll be hearing more about a Switch 2 next week, but I feel like every single week we get rumors that we'll be hearing about a Switch 2 next week, so I don't think that'll actually happen, but we'll see. I would love to be proven wrong. But anyway, it's going to be interesting to see what happens with Microsoft. And again, like I said, let us know at PlayerOneSyn, at PlayerOneSYN on Instagram, if you think there's something coming of this, if you think that they will eventually scale back hardware production. I'm curious to see what these business plans look like. It could be nothing, right? It could be nothing. It would be very weird for Phil Spencer to tweet that basically in response to these rumors and then have the business update be, we're making an Xbox Series X Pro, which everyone was kind of expecting them to do at some point, so I don't know. We'll see if it happens, we'll see what happens, and definitely stay tuned because we will be talking about what happens as soon as we know a little bit more. In honor of Valentine's Day this week, figured I'd talk a bit about games you can play with a loved one. This is local multiplayer games, couch co-op, party games, those sorts of things. Games that you can play with other people in the same room, so you can sit on a couch with your partner and play a game and hopefully not absolutely lose it at each other because, you know, Mario Party's on this list and that game has a reputation. Why'd I put Mario Party on the list? I don't know. I already mentioned Trine. That's a game that I got into and it's kind of what also inspired me to chat about this a little bit because, yeah, it's a local multiplayer game. And I do really like local multiplayer games, like co-op games, couch co-op, where, you know, you're working together, it's not just tearing each other apart. They work best, though, when you do have an opportunity to just mess with other players. I think that's what makes them kind of fun and charming, when, like, yeah, you're all working towards a common goal, but, like, you're gonna mess around with the other players a little bit. It's also what makes games like Towerfall Ascension. Great game. I love Towerfall. That is a fantastic game. And Towerfall Ascension is the more, like, co-op story mode. But you absolutely can still just mess with your allies and, like, destroy them. It's so much fun. It's kind of an archery, like, 2D archery game. It's by the same team behind Celeste, which, phenomenal game. I love Celeste. But yeah, it's really, really fun. Highly, highly recommend Towerfall. Give it a chance if you get the chance. And I mean, you've got your standards. You've got, you know, we spoke about Smash Bros. With Ainsley earlier. And Smash Bros., yeah, it's a great multiplayer game. And I'm going to give a shout out to Brawl here for being the one that has the best co-op by far, because it's really the one with, like, the only co-op. I mean, you've got sort of co-op modes. You can do the sandbag, the home run contest co-op in Ultimate if you want. But, like, the Subspace Emissary was where it's at. I have so many fond memories of with, like, one of my best family friends from when I was younger. Playing through the Subspace Emissary was such a good time. We beat the whole mode, got all the characters, did all of that, and it was fantastic. And then I played it single player as well. I beat it single player as well, and I even went after getting the boss trophies, which was an absolute nightmare because you'd have to get them down to enough health where they would die if you threw the, like, trophy base item at them. It was not worth going for, and I did not get them all, but I got a handful. Any Mario spin-off is pretty much guaranteed to be at least a decent time with friends. Now, I did have Mario Party on the list. I actually don't think Mario Party works great with just two people. I think you kind of need, you know, a couple others, preferably full four. It's still fun, though. It's still a good time. You know, it's just fun to mess around, and it is fun if you want a more casual, I don't even want to think about this game kind of thing, because you can just kind of, you can almost play Mario Party in the background. Like, half the games are just random luck. You don't actually need to pay attention to what you're doing, really, all that much. Mario Kart is always a good time as well. These are much more competitive, but they're an option. If we want to lean into the real, like, co-op, lately I've been actually playing a fair bit of For the King. I've been playing it online, not locally, but you absolutely can play it locally, and I do recommend because it's a very fun time. It's a tabletop-inspired board game RPG. Really good time. It can be played with up to 3 people. Go around this, like, massive map, fighting enemies, gathering XP, all your very traditional, you know, D&D-esque RPG stuff. It follows a simple story, but what really makes the game are the, like, random wacky events that can happen. You can wander along and suddenly your character is attacked by a kraken and you just have to fight the kraken. It's a great time. It can lead to some very funny moments when you decide to, you know, abandon your party and go off by yourself and end up fighting a kraken. I'm speaking from experience. But it's a good time. It's fun. It's a bit basic. There's not really much to it. And it's a roguelike. So, you know, once you die, like, you kind of just start from the start, but with everything you've already unlocked. It's interesting, and it's definitely worth giving a shot. Possibly the most classic example, though, of couch co-op, Overcooked. I have mixed opinions on Overcooked. I think it's a little too hectic for its own good a lot of the time. And that's what makes it fun. But that's not always fun, is the problem. So, for those who haven't played or don't really know much about it, Overcooked, there's 2 games, Overcooked and Overcooked 2. It's a party cooking game where you have to, like, prepare dishes in a set order with your friends, trying to, like, run around this little stage, gathering the ingredients you need, getting them prepared and cooking them up for guests in order to try and beat certain score thresholds to get, you know, certain number of stars. It's got a reputation for being one of those multiplayer games that, you know, like Mario Party, quote, ruins friendships. I don't feel that with Overcooked as much as something like Mario Party, but it's definitely there. My main issue is that it's just, there's so much to do and it's kind of awkward sometimes. It also has spawned its own genre, basically, of these sorts of wacky co-op games. And they're all fun, but they all kind of have the same shtick. I just don't think it has that much staying power. I do wish there were more games that were couch co-op that had that level of staying power, that was like, here's the game that you will wait until you have your friends over to play it. It's not just a game that you can play when you have some people over. It's like, you will play this game with the same people each week. Like, that's what the Subspace Emissary and Brawl was to me. Like, we played this game just, like, whenever we caught up, it was the game that we played. We had made a certain amount of progress. We wanted to keep going from that point. That's what made it really fun. I feel like there just aren't that many games like that anymore. They're just a lot harder to find. A lot of co-op games do tend towards the more wacky messing with your friends stuff, which I get. It especially works better in, like, a party-like environment. But yeah, like, let me know, what are your kind of go-to co-op games? There's a bunch that I've heard about that I haven't had a chance to play, unfortunately. Stuff like, I haven't played It Takes Two, which I've heard is a really, really good example of literally what I just described, of like a co-op game where you play and you work together and it has like a story that you follow and that is the game. Definitely let me know, what do you like? Let us know on Instagram at Player1Syn, Player1Syn. And we're going away from the video games for a little bit. We're talking about the D&D stuff. I've been playing D&D since late 2019, early 2020, I think. And I started off DMing, and I figured, you know, I'm going to talk a little bit about being a DM, because it's something that I think a lot of people are, like, a lot of people who don't play D&D are, like, fascinated by D&D, but feel like it's harder to get into than it actually is. Because all things considered, D&D is not that hard. Like, it's pretty simple. Specifically, a lot of people, I think, get very intimidated by the idea of being a DM or Dungeon Master, for those who don't play D&D. But it's not that bad. It can be stressful and, like, you do have to kind of put in a bit of work, but it's not that bad. And my big, big recommendation is start with the basics and be careful about listening to D&D podcasts. I love them. I listen to them a lot. And they are a great way to get into D&D, or if you already like D&D, they can be just very entertaining. They're not a great way to learn to play D&D, though. Because you got to remember that people who are making a podcast about, or like, who are making a D&D podcast, they're making a show. The show is them playing the game, but the show comes first. They will, can and do bend the rules and bend how things work to fit the show. And when you try and emulate that, especially as a newbie, it's going to make things very, very weird. And I know that because I made this exact mistake. I got really into D&D from listening to The Adventure Zone, which, you know, it's a very fun podcast. Looking back on it, having listened to more D&D podcasts, it's honestly not as good as I remember, unfortunately. But, like, it's a fun one. And it's a fun introduction to D&D. God, do they mess with the rules. As in, barely follow them at some points. And when you get into D&D, you might be like, oh, well, that's really fun, though. You can just kind of do whatever. And, like, that is fun. But it makes the game worse, it makes things run worse, and you kind of learn when you do it and, like, when you make that mistake of trying to emulate that style. And this kind of goes for all D&D podcasts, not just for The Adventure Zone, because they all have this to an extent. Some will be more rules-focused than others, but remember, all of them, at the end of the day, are a show first and a game second. You kind of learn that the rules are there for a reason. They're there to make your job easier. The rules are not the enemy of the DM. Like, that's an opinion that I see get tossed around a little bit online and stuff, is the rules hold the players and the DM back a little bit, and God, you're so constrained by them. And I'm like, you know what? I used to think that, but now, having played a lot more D&D and having run a lot more D&D, no, the rules are there to make your life so much easier. They are there so that you don't have to think about what to do. It's just written in the book. Just read the book. If you are interested in starting, I do recommend starting with the Essentials Kit. It's probably the easiest intro to D&D. It's pretty good. I mean, you can find modules pretty much anywhere that are definitely worth checking out. And yeah, start with a module. Don't homebrew everything. It'll make your life so much easier. Because again, everything will just be written there. You don't have to think about it. It tells you what to do. And find the right people. When you're playing D&D for the first time, I recommend playing, at least the way I did it, you know, I played with people who had also never played D&D before. And that was fine. You know, play with your friends. If you have never played D&D and none of your friends have ever played D&D, or if you don't have friends who are interested in D&D, find a local, like, gaming group. There's places all around that do run local D&D games. And just see if you can find people you click with. You don't expect to click with randoms immediately. I've definitely been in a situation playing games with, like, random people that I've just met, and it's not really worked out. But that's kind of the joy of playing games with these random groups, is if it doesn't work out that one time, like, that's fine. You don't have to, like, keep playing with them over and over and over again. And then once you find some people you do click with, that's when you go for it and play with them over and over and over again. And it makes the whole experience just a lot nicer when you and the other players are on the same page. Speaking of, if you are going to bend rules, just make sure everyone's on the same page as to what rules are being bent and why. It's never a pleasant experience as a player when the DM doesn't apply the same rules to other players that they then apply to you. If you're playing a spellcaster and the DM limits some of your spells without really good reason, it can be pretty frustrating. And again, this is something I've been guilty of doing in the past as well. You know, it's actually something that I've seen tossed around a lot online, is a lot of, like, beginner DMs see, for example, the rogue's sneak attack ability and think, oh, that's too powerful, I need to nerf that, when it's not. It's built in there to work its exact way for a reason. Like, it's actually perfectly balanced. And that was something I did when I started. I was like, oh, that doesn't make any sense. The player's not sneaking, and that's a lot of damage. But it turns out if they're not doing that damage, the rogue is basically useless, so, like, they kind of have to. So yeah, try not to mess with the rules too much. Talk to the players. If there's a reason that they want to change the rules, or a reason that you want to change the rules, like, at the end of the day, D&D is literally just a conversation. You are just talking to other players and occasionally rolling some dice, and that is all there is to it. And honestly, this goes for any tabletop RPG. I actually really like games that aren't D&D. I think D&D as a system is not the best. But if you've never played tabletop games before and you've always been curious about them, I do still kind of recommend starting with D&D because it's so universal, it's so popular, it's so well known, and it is the game that I think is the easiest to just jump into without really needing to, like, figure stuff out as much as the others. And it's a lot easier to find groups to play with. Like, you can just go on Facebook, find a local D&D group, boom, you're good to go. Honestly, any social media, go on, like, Discord or whatever, find a local gaming group, you will find people playing D&D. But once you've kind of broached that little tabletop entryway point, definitely start looking around for other systems as well, because you might find some that you enjoy a lot more. And it will be harder to find players for them, because, again, D&D is just so much bigger than all the others. But there'll be people out there willing to try, and definitely give them a shot. If you play games like other tabletop games, let me know what you've been playing. I'm a big fan of Monster of the Week, which I also did learn about from the Adventure Zone. But hey, I mean, it's a great system. Love that game. I've been really wanting to play Masks lately as well. That's another one that's similar-ish. But yeah, let me know what you've been playing at Player1Syn, Player1Syn on Instagram, and spread the love for some other RPGs. If you're new to D&D as well, let us know how that's going for you. If you're a DM, you've got any like tips and tricks you want to share, let us know. You are listening to Player1 here on Syn, where we have spoken all things gaming as we do each and every week. Spoke a bit about D&D and getting into that, local multiplayer games for you to play with a loved one on Valentine's Day or just your friends in general. Talked a bit about what's going on with Microsoft because some interesting stuff happening there, and we'll probably know a bit more soon this week when they have that announcement. We had an interview with Ainsley Turner, the creator of Super Smash Bros. Live, which is happening this Friday. Get involved. And of course, the playlist and the local news, where we spoke about what we've been playing. If you want to get in touch and let us know what you've been playing, do that at Player1Syn. That's Player1Syn, all one word, on Instagram. Thank you so much for listening. Catch the podcast on Omni, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. If you've been listening to this episode on the podcast, then share the podcast with other people. Honestly, even if you're listening to it live right now, share the podcast anyway. Because, thank you. If you do that, you're cool. And, of course, stay tuned for more Player One and more great shows on Syn each and every day, each and every week. You've been listening to Player One, a Syn Media program. Syn is a radio station in Naarm, Melbourne, for all young people aged 12 to 25. You can listen to Player One live, Monday nights from 8 p.m. on 90.7 FM, DAB+, or the Syn website, syn.org.au. Tell us what you've been playing on our Instagram, at Player1Syn. That's Player1Syn, all one word. And make sure to tell your friends about the show.